Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. Could 2024 be the last election ever? That's a comment Vice President Kamala Harris agreed with on a podcast this week. And it's a sentiment we have seen echoed by all sorts of loons on the left. So what really are the stakes of this election? Here with me now, the best person to ask that question of, Victor Davis Hanson. Victor is a senior fellow at the Stanford Hoover Institution. His new book, set to be released next up, is titled The End of Everything: How Wars Descend into Annihilation. You can pre-order it and support Victor now. Debt. You can go to bed thinking about it. You can wake up thinking about it too. Here's the truth. The system traps you in debt. High interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. And insane inflation keeps you stuck paycheck to paycheck. Done with Debt can be your lifeline. Done with Debt has an ingenious new strategy to help erase your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Done with Debt analyzes all the debt options you qualify for. They know how to reduce bills, how to cut interest rates. Their skilled staff of negotiators, they know how to get debt out of your life permanently without bankruptcy or a loan. Done with Debt has experts who can share with you strategies for eliminating debt, but you do need to hurry because some debt solutions are time sensitive. Here's how easy they make it. Go to donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com, donewithdebt.com. Victor, so good to see you again. How you doing?
Pretty good, Megyn. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm just going to table Kamala Harris's warning for 1 second because there's a better story to start with. And that is Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. Victor, you know this, and I think most of our audience knows this, but just we get almost daily reminders that we are being represented by a field of idiots. Remember when you were a kid and you looked up to somebody who made it to the U.S. Congress? Certainly the Senate, but even in the House. You used to think like that would require a certain level of intelligence, accomplishment, wisdom. We were wrong. This person is a complete moron. So she represents much of the Houston area. My friends in Houston, do better. You've got to make a change. Look at who is representing you. She decided to weigh in on the eclipse and the solar system. And she went to the Booker T. Washington High School down in Houston. She's a Democrat. And decided to speak to those in front of her about how the moon is made up mostly of gases. Listen.
A full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat that is almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is more manageable.
Okay. Now, I confess, prior to this dust up, I did not know exactly what the moon was made of, but I knew that it was solids and it was largely volcanic. I at no point thought it was made up of gases. And almost everybody understands that. And now Sheila Jackson Lee is trying to come out and cover herself by saying the following. Obviously, I misspoke and meant to say the sun. But as usual, Republicans are focused on stupid things. Well, we are. That's true. We're focused on stupid things. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing. Instead of stuff that really matters. What can I say, though? Foolish thinkers lust for stupidity. So what she's trying to say, Victor, is that she meant to say the sun. That a full sun that is a complete rounded circle, and that the sun is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is, how could we as humans live on the sun? Are the gases such that we could do that? Now you tell me whether that makes it better or worse.
Yeah, I don't think the problem with living on the sun is the gas. I think it's the heat. But it reminds me, Do you remember maybe 6 years ago, Hank Johnson, he was another representative, and they were asking him about the Guam tsunami. And he said, well, I got to ask you something. Is the island in danger that if everybody went to one way on one side of the island to flee the big waves, then there would be too much weight on Guam and it would flip over? And the expression on the general's face as he looked at him, he thought, okay, how do I answer this congressperson who thinks that you can flip an island over by too many people being in one place? So it was, is in that category. But I don't know. I mean, we don't elect people on their intellect or their experience. It's mostly tribalism and whether, you know, it's this House of Representatives is really declined in its caliber. I'm just saying that as I can remember the 1960s and 50s, at least people in the Democratic Party were pretty good. Some of the House speakers, and you had people in the Senate like Everett Dirksen that give long, you know, lectures on history and culture. They were a pretty good, sound bunch. We've declined in a lot of ways in the people we elect. I don't know why it is. Maybe it's social media. Maybe it's too much money, or maybe it's too much tribalism. But we're electing people on who they say they represent, or what, you know, their tribe, gay, male, female, black, white. That's a really bad idea in a multiracial democracy.
Well, the problem is we're relying on these people to help us with entitlement reform so that we don't have Medicare and Social Security go bankrupt, to help us close up the southern border, which, you know, the president has maintained he absolutely has to have Congress's cooperation on. This is who we're looking at. By the way, this woman went to Yale undergrad and UVA law school. Okay. For those of you who still think these are esteemed institutions that somehow validate one's intelligence, think again, because here's more of Representative Sheila Jackson Lee on the moon being a planet. Watch.
Today will be the closest distance that the moon has ever been in the last 20 years, which means that's why they will shut the light down, because they will be close to the earth. And Dr. Simmons, I didn't go too far away from the scientific explanation. Is that correct? Hopefully. All right. So I was near it. The solar system is bigger than us, though there are solar systems and there are systems that are smaller than the earth. Still, we are in a solar system, and we depend on the earth, the moon, and the sun. That is our existence. That is what creates our desire for creativity, our music, our weather, our rain, our snow, our cold, our heat, that solar system working. Some of you are going into engineering. This is what engineering is. We have yet to know whether you can live on the moon. But I don't know about you. I want to be first in line to know how to live and to be able to survive on the moon. That's another planet, which you're going to see shortly. You're not serious.
Oh my God.
Get the glasses on. I'm getting ready to blow the whistle. When I blow the whistle, get out on the field. Get out on the field like you're going to find your own space, your own heaven. It's going to be one.
I can't.
Come on out.
She can't get the eclipse glasses on. Okay, you get the picture, Victor.
Yeah, I do.
I think we should send her.
Yeah, I mean, she thinks the Earth is a solar system as well, and that there are solar systems smaller than the Earth. I don't know what that could be. A bunch of, I don't know, 9 or 10 planets crammed inside the Earth, but.
Misdescribed what actually was happening with the eclipse, with the moon's location. And I guess that makes sense when she thinks it's a planet. But keep going.
Well, I think everybody got when you said, you know, she went to Yale, but Yale's like Stanford or Princeton, and there's no SAT required now. And everybody thinks that we engineered the applications this year. So the incoming class at Stanford is 21% white, of 9% white males. I just picked that figure out because that's the one group that falls so far below their demographic. They're only one third or one fourth their demographic in the general population. So when you start engineering these classes, you think that's the end of it. But you talk to faculty, or you're a faculty member, and you can see what happens. That's the beginning. Because then you have to change the course content, or you have to add new courses, or you have to do what Yale does, where you give 80% of the people A's. And if you don't do it, you come under the gaze of the DEI conglomerate, and then they say you're systematically grading in a way that reflects bias or racism or whatever. And so our whole society, if we're not going to have any standards of meritocracy, and we're going to adjudicate what a person says by their greater claims of victimization. And that's what she's basically saying. She didn't say, I apologize, I don't know what I'm talking about. She says that the Republicans are glomming onto me. And you, she should say, I don't care if they glom onto me or right. I'm going to be accurate when I try to inspire young people about the world beyond Earth. But and I'll do a better job next time. But that's not where we are now.
I have secondhand embarrassment for her. If the clip has gone everywhere. Her explanation or clarification makes it worse. She's also too dumb to realize that. I'm very concerned. It's not a problem limited to the left in Congress, in the House of Representatives, but boy, oh boy, there are a lot of folks over in that far left part of the caucus that you'd never want to have dinner with, because how could you make intelligent conversation? How do you respond to that? Yeah.
I do think, though, well, that she's on the B scale. Hank Johnson got the record by saying that an whole island can flip over when too many people crowd on one side. That hasn't been ever rivaled, but she came close.
Yeah, she gave it the old college try. Okay, so that's the most disturbing thing in the news today. Let's talk about abortion, because, boy, did that burst onto the scene in a renewed way yesterday. This is a bad, bad event for the Republican Party and for Donald Trump, what happened in Arizona. And I understand why it happened and that they will likely fix it, I think, in Arizona, though I'm not 100% sure. But this is going to be so exploited by the Democrats from now to Election Day, like coming to a state near you. And it's already a problematic issue for Republicans going into 2024. So you tell me what you think, where the court in Arizona basically found that an attempt to create a 15-week abortion ban in Arizona a couple years ago did not replace an earlier law from 1850-something that said all abortions are illegal unless necessary to save the life of the mother. That's the only exception. And therefore, it basically resurrected that law and let that be the standing law in the wake of Roe falling. And now you've got everybody cashing in on this on the Democratic side. I mean, they were already primed to make this the issue driving votes. Right now, Arizona has a Democratic governor, and both chambers of the House there are controlled by Republicans. But they're putting this on the ballot in November. And already many of these swing states are looking, the Democrats in the swing states, to make this an issue like gay marriage, which kept George W. Bush in the White House for a second term. Karl Rove made sure that there was an initiative on the ballots back then that drove the more conservative evangelical and black voters to the polls for George W. Bush in numbers sufficient to get him reelected. And that's what they're going to try to do again with abortion. And abortion has been driving people to the polls over the past several terms since Roe fell. So what do you make of this decision in Arizona and its likely impact?
Well, I think they can handle it. I think Trump had a pretty good line or position that it's now up to the states, and each state has their own culture, and it's not a national issue. I don't think nationalizing the issue is going to be a winning argument for the Republican. And so if he says it's up for the states and we have a tripartite government, legislative, executive, judicial, all Trump has to say are candidates, we don't have anything to do with the courts. They're independent, they're autonomous, and we believe that it's up to the state's legislatures to reflect the will of the state.
Okay, but wait, let me jump in and ask you something. I agree with that, but the problem that he's going to be facing is this issue, if on the ballot in November, will drive all the Democrats to turn out.
It will.
And so those Democrats will not only vote for their local officials, they're going to vote up and down the line for their U.S. Yes. senator, for their congressman, and for president. And the bigger the Democratic turnout, the worse it is for the Republicans.
It is. But they're in a position where some of the members of the party went to the 8-week, and and this whole chain of reaction, they demagogued the issue. So at this late hour, all they have to say is, we welcome people to vote on it. Whatever you want to do, vote. But it's up to you in the state. And we, as Republicans, believe that you have the right to do. That's about the best fallback position you can have. And if I was Trump, I wouldn't weigh in on any particular week. And I think he did a really smart thing. I know Mike Pence got angry at him and stuff. But you go to the 8, if you let people do the 8-week ban, you're going to lose. You're going to lose a lot of elections. And they know that. And so they're in a bind now. And the best thing that could happen would be the court would be overruled or redefine its ruling before the election. But
yes, that's what they have to somehow make clear. Maybe they can get a vote in the legislature. Maybe the Republican legislature will vote on a reasonable solution that would be signed by a Democratic governor, though she has no incentive to. But right now, abortion rights groups said last week, quoting here, that they have enough signatures to put an abortion access ballot initiative up for a vote in this November. I mean, to my point, this is what they're going to do. They don't want the governor to sign any sort of a law. They want it to be on the ballot. They want to drive the turnout.
Trump was very, for all of the issues that people criticize him on, this was an issue that he was pretty adroit on in 2016 in that debate with Hillary. He really kind of, and you remember, he drummed in the idea that the Democratic Party is abortion on demand all the way up to the point of birth. And he said, and he got very graphic about that. And there's only two positions for the Republicans if they're going to answer. One is to let the states decide. And two is that you, for humanitarian reasons, you don't allow people to have abortions that involves infanticide. And that's all they can do. And it's going to get important, as you point out, because the Democratic Party is not going to run on Afghanistan, the border, Gaza, inflation, crime, energy. It has no other issue. So it's going to be January 6th, Donald Trump in jail, and abortion. And that we pretty much know that. And then the other thing they're going to do, and we know that's going to happen, it's already happening. They're going to have Obrador, who already said he wanted $20 billion, and he's going to be terrified of a Trump presidency. So he's going to start on his side of the border, clamping down. And he's done it a little bit to help Biden. Maybe he'll get some money, who knows. And then we're going to have the student loan forgiveness. Then we're going to have beg the Saudis, beg the Venezuelans, take more out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to get oil down. And we'll probably get a Federal Reserve effort, no matter what the inflation is, to lower interest rates. And that's all and then we're going to have turn the judiciary loose on Donald Trump. That's pretty much their game plan. They've said it and it's predictable.
But this decision, of course, plays right into their game plan, right? Of highlighting the issue of abortion in the most extreme way, reverting back to an 1864 law. And then you've got comments like this, which are already making the rounds and will undoubtedly turn into a campaign ad very soon. Mark Simone was on Larry Kudlow's show on Fox and made the following comment, which has already set the left on fire. SOT 17.
If you had to travel to another state to get an abortion, it's not the worst thing in the world. Hopefully, this is a very rare occurrence in your life. Once in your life, maybe you would do it. Buying a bus ticket to go somewhere to get it is not the worst thing in the world.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't take a political strategist to understand what's going to be done with that.
Yeah, though I don't think, I like Mark Simone, but I don't think he's going to be considered a spokesperson for.
Agreed. And I like Mark too, but I'm just saying it'll get used. It'll get put on loop. This is what Republicans feel. This is what they want for you. Get on the damn bus. You could be a young mom. You could have two other kids. You could have health problems. You could have a job. You might lose. You know what I mean?
I think they need to, they really need, part of the problem with the Republican, it's not just that people say things that are not helpful to what they're trying to explain, but they don't broadcaster. They don't say what the left is saying. So, for example, if you're in Dearborn and you have a president of the United States who is pandering to 250,000 voters, and they've got a guy up on stage, this constituency, and he's quoting chapter and verse Ayatollah Khomeini, and then how awful and horrible the United States is, and then people are interrupting him in this constituency, screaming death to America, and Karine Jean-Pierre doesn't want to address that, then that's a very powerful thing that Republicans could focus on, because it shows you that no one on the left is coming up to defend their own country. When you say death to America, you're talking about Americans. It should be saying this constituency is either yelling or they're not stopping members of their constituency that they want to kill other Americans. When you say death to America.
I'm going to play that in 1 minute, and I definitely want to get your opinion on it. But before I leave the abortion question, to your point, the Republicans really, like, you can't highlight it. Mark said what he said, and it's how many people feel. Like, so what? Get on a bus. That's the way democracy works. We have a 50-state experiment. If California's not the same as Texas or Mississippi, and that's just the way it was founded. The country was founded. We have these little experiments going on in every state where the laws are different. But it sounds somewhat callous, sounds somewhat like kind of head in the clouds about what women are dealing with. On the other hand, are the extreme Dems on this issue, which will not get played on loop on channels like CNN, but here they are. You'll hear them places like this. Watch.
They should be able to get an abortion if they want to. And for some people, that is full term.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth. Would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified?
My bill would allow that, yes.
Do you believe that a woman should be able to terminate a pregnancy up until the moment of birth?
Look, I think that that happens very, very rarely. But at the end of the day, I believe that the decision over abortion belongs to a woman and a physician.
And I chose to have an abortion. I walked proudly into Planned Parenthood.
And I wouldn't have been able to do this without employing a woman's right to choose.
And I have all of this, all of it, because I was allowed bodily autonomy at 15. Stop talking about my abortion.
Wow. Those last three for the listening audience were Tish James. She proudly went into Planned Parenthood. Michelle Williams, the actress at her, I don't know if that was the Academy Awards, but an acceptance speech. And Busy Phillips was the last one who, not for nothing, but last week was celebrating Christine Blasey Ford at the release of her book and thanking her for her bravery and so on. So that's what we're dealing with. But that's a major piece of the Democratic Party, women who are proud of their abortions. They want to scream it from the rooftops. They love aborting babies all the way through the 9th month. Don't have to have a life or a health reason. Just, you decided not to be a mother.
You showed the Mark Simone clip, but if the Republicans were to juxtapose with the clips you just showed from this abortion on demand, I think most people would find that much more disturbing than even what he said. And it depends. It's up to the Republicans whether they want to play by the McCain and Romney, George Bush, Marcus of Queensbury rules, or they want to go back to Lee Atwater when George H.W. Bush ran the Willie Horton and the Boston Dirty Harbor, the tank ad, and he destroyed Dukakis. And after he did that, George Bush and all the Republicans said, we never want to do that again. Bob Dole said, I never want to do that again. That's not who we are. And they lost 7 out of the last 8 popular votes. They haven't won 51% of the presidential popular vote since 1988. And so it's up to them to see what is they're going to do. And I'm not arguing for a dirty campaign, but given whom they're up against, I don't think Romneyism works anymore, Doleism or Bushism or McCainism. And Donald Trump showed that in 2016. He made some mistakes in 2020, and there were other issues involved. But I don't think that he's going to play by the Marcus of Queensbury rule. So the clips that you showed, if the Democrats go down the abortion, I think you're going to see a lot of Republicans showing things like that. And I think they're going to be very effective. They better.
Yeah. Or they better get used to losing. Let's talk about Dearborn now. So Dearborn, yes. Michigan, this is in the wake of everything that's happening in Israel, which we're going to talk about. But you've got this this gathering at which the chant "Death to America" broke out. And as far as I can tell, absolutely nothing's been done about it, said about it. And the White House seems utterly disinterested in it. But this is not Iran. It's Michigan. It's Michigan. Dearborn, Michigan. Here's a little bit of it.
Why don't we just focus more on Israel and not talk so much about America? Because it's the United States government that provides the funds for all of the atrocities that we just heard about. And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America. Malcolm X said, and I quote, "We live in one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth. It's not Genocide Joe that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go."
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine! From the river to the sea,
Palestine will be free.
The man leading those remarks was Tariq Bazzi. Per Fox News, a Michigan-based activist associated with the Hadi Institute, their website says their focus is youth education and the raising of productive, positive, and proud Muslims. The best way to accomplish this is to teach by example. The guy runs a Montessori school. So that's what he's teaching in his school, by example. Death to America. We're the problem. Mention the Ayatollah there. That's what's on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, he begs a question, why stay here if he says it's the most rottenest country? He's going to quote the arch hostage taker of all time, Khomeini. Why do they want to stay here? Why do people from the Middle East that feel that way, why do they come over and why do we let them in? I think they're very afraid, though, because I think they feel they have a rendezvous with a reckoning, because I think the American people, when they see the Manhattan Bridge shut down or the Golden Gate Bridge shut down during commuter traffic, or they see Easter and Christmas services disrupted in churches, or they see the Lincoln Memorial or a veteran cemetery in Los Angeles defaced, or they see Jews running into a library for their life, at some point people say, okay, that's enough. And I think the Biden administration is really playing this wrong. They're so obsessed on this mythical 250,000 people that they are alienating a lot of people, getting angry. And what we know what's coming, Megan, if Donald Trump is going to be elected, first of all, they're going to have a ban on not just Muslim countries, but Venezuela and probably Cuba, as they did in North Korea, but also Gaza and the West Bank and Syria, and probably Iran as well. And then anybody who's on a student visa and breaks the law, and many of them have, will probably be just politely, they're not going to deport them. They're just going to say, your visa is no longer valid. We suggest you go before you're subject to arrest. And I think that would make a powerful, all of this is based on the idea there's not going to be any repercussions. And we're starting to already see that the radical Palestinians that were Pomona College or Vanderbilt, all it takes is just a smidgen of vertebrae on the back of a college president. When that college president Pomona said, well, I've got 10 minutes, it's your choice. If you want to keep doing this, those of you who are not students at Pomona, you get off the campus, and if you break the law, you'll deal with law enforcement. Those of you who are, in 10 minutes, you're going to be expelled or suspended. And that really sent a message. And it shows you that this is all an illusion. These people who are protesting feel they have a blank check. They have radical majority support. And that's not true. And I think people are finally just saying, you know, we put people in prison that went into the Capitol, and we have people going into the Senate restaurant. We had Representative Tlaib leading a demonstration that was disrupting right in the rotunda. And we have broken up Senate hearings with these protesters. And we're going to apply the same rules that we did to the January 6th people. And if a politician or a president were to do that, and I think that may happen, they would have overwhelming public support.
Victor, here's what's crazy. We had the FBI investigating parents literally for speaking too long at the microphone at their school board meetings or for not putting on their mask to tell teachers and school board members that they were unhappy with COVID policies or overreaches on race or gender. The FBI got sicked on them. This guy and all the people in Dearborn chanting death to America doesn't look like there's anything, or at least here's what Karine Jean-Pierre had to say about it when asked in SOT 14.
Is the president at all concerned that Dearborn is facing a risk of becoming a hotbed of any sort of homegrown threats?
I don't have any intelligence to share with you on that. Obviously, that's something that we're always very vigilant about, but don't have any national intelligence to share with you.
By the way, Karine Jean-Pierre saying, I don't have any intelligence to share with you on that. We should just put that on loop. That can be her answer for almost everything.
Yeah, it is. All she had to say is that we deplore anybody who is on American soil calling for the death of all of us. That's not that's a no-brainer. One good thing about all of this, Megan, it's really dispelled all of these myths. Myth number one was you can hate Israel, but you're not anti-Semitic. When you see Jewish students that are chased down or Jews on the street, nobody asks them whether they're for Israel or not. So that's gone now. They have conflated. And if you're these people who are demonstrating do not just dislike Israel, they dislike Jews, and they're not shy about it. And number two, as we've always told, well, the Hamas doesn't represent the people of Gaza. But every single demonstration, they mouth basically the Hamas charter. Polls show that Hamas has about 74 or 75% of support on the West Bank. And then the third myth is the people who are protesting on behalf of Hamas or on behalf of Gaza are very patriotic Americans, and they love this country. And I doubt that. I really do. And I think a lot of them are not even American citizens. They're here on visas or work or student visas. And I think they've really hurt their cause. And I think a lot of people are going to wise up because you can't continue to allow this group to do that. And I mean by deface things, disrupt.
They're starting to win the propaganda war. Just a quick look at Dearborn, Michigan, a couple months ago in the protest there, Victor, to give you and the audience a better sense for what's happening. What I'm sure these people we just listened to were in this mass of folks who took to the streets. Watch this. It's thousands of people on the streets of Dearborn with Palestinian flags. Thousands. So that's Dearborn, Michigan. That's not, you know, that's not over there in Gaza. And the policy that the White House is now shifting to seems to be giving them exactly what they want. Right now, Joe Biden's calling for a unilateral declaration of a ceasefire by Israel, 6 to 8 weeks, zero conditions. You don't have to give us back what I understand are now our last 5 living Americans over there who have been taken hostage, 33 dead right from the beginning. It was 8, then 3 more died. So that's at least 36 dead. And now we still have 5 in captivity. No, keep them. It's no problem. Just Israel, stop your shooting. Let, you know, the humanitarian aid go through, and absolutely no conditions. They're getting what they want.
Yeah, they are, but I'm not sure they're going to get what they want in November. I still think most Americans, when I look at the polls, about 65% support Israel and about 35%, you could say, support Hamas. And when you look at the Jewish community, it's not 250,000 voters. It's probably 9 million citizens and probably 4 to 5 million voters. And I understand that a lot of them have the majority are diehard Democrats, but I think you're going to get the largest defection, and that could be 30 or 40% of the Jewish donor class and voters. It may not make a difference in New York and California, but it may make a difference in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan. And So, I mean, remember, we got to keep things in context. This is a Democratic state, and it is a incumbent president, and they are running either neck and neck or behind, and they're so desperate that they're risking alienating the traditional base, the Jewish American base of their party, to pander to 250,000 votes. I don't see it as confidence. I think they're absolutely desperate. And they're willing, but this administration is willing to do anything. They're going to basically betray our strongest ally in the Middle East. And they're trying, remember their use when we were growing up, at least my generation, there was the ugly American. The left said, we always intervened in the Dominican Republic. We overthrew the government of Honduras. We went into Chile with AT&T. And now what are we doing? We're overtly trying to overthrow the elected government of Israel and interfering their internal politics. We know that. And so they are really doing things that I think are going to boomerang in November. I just don't think people want this. This administration is so desperate, whether it's on abortion or pandering to radical Arab American pro-Hamas voters. And it's not a sign of confidence. I don't even think it's a pathway to success.
Kamala Harris, similar to Blinken, had this warning for the Israelis last week. And sure enough, now we get this announcement that Israel for now is not going into Rafah, but watch.
It was a candid and frank conversation.
Between
we have made clear, and the president has made clear, of course, that we will support and make sure that Israel is never left without an ability to defend itself. At the same time, if there are not changes to their approach, it is very likely we're going to change our approach.
There it is. She's telling him what to do.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. We'll see what she does. But if come June or July, they announce they're cutting off 155 millimeter shells or javelins or replacement Patriot missiles, and they get into a big war with Hezbollah, there's going to be outrage at what they're doing. And I think let them try to do it. And I think it's not a wise thing to betray Israel after what happened on October 7th. And we know what's going to happen if they can't go back into Gaza. We're going to hear from Hamas very soon that they won. And they're going to say that on the greatest day, we killed more Jews than any day since the Holocaust. And here we are, intact. We're still here, and we're going to come back stronger than ever. And there's 100,000 Jews along the Lebanese border, and they're homeless, and they can't go back because of Hezbollah. And so that's what they're going to do. And unless they're allowed to finish the job, it's going to be a victory for Hamas. And that's a defeat, not just for Israel, for us too. Because Hamas, as we saw from their satellites in Dearborn, they're antithetical to the whole American, what America stands for. And, you know, there has to be a lot of social censure for anybody who gets up in a podium and leads people to say death to America, and then the president of the United States and his administration are pandering to such a degree that they can't even condemn that whole movement.
Right.
And
right.
I don't know.
Again, I say, like, oh, parents had the FBI sicked on them at a church out in California for not wearing their masks during the COVID pandemic
that.
When they went
I
to worship
that.
At school board meetings for objecting. And yet, death to America? Well, anyway, we'll get back to you. Let me take a quick break, and then we'll come right back and we'll talk about her warning, speaking of Kamala Harris, about basically democracy's over if you don't reelect her and her boss, Joe Biden. Stand by. I want to tell you about Gen 90, the latest breakthrough in skincare from our friends over at Genucel. Those bags under your eyes from lack of sleep, being overworked, stress, and even those seasonal allergies that come with spring weather, Gen 90 can help. It also helps around the eyes, the forehead, crow's feet, laugh lines, even the chin, and it starts working in seconds. Gen 90 technology is luxurious. It's silky smooth. Now you can get Genucel's classic under-eye bags and puffiness serum with every Gen 90 order, and also get their luxurious Genucel XV Collagen Builder Moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid in a pure natural base. Results guaranteed or your money back. Plus, get an extra 10% off automatically applied at checkout. genucel.com/MK. genucel.com/MK. Order right now and get a free limited edition spa box with bonus gifts and free shipping. That's genucel.com/MK. genucel.com/MK. One of the things that's happening in our country right now with respect to this conflict, Israel, Palestine, Hamas, as yes, these lefties who we just saw in Dearborn are marching, saying things like death to America. But also on the right, there's a considerable growing, dare I say, faction that is making the case that Israel's gone too far, or that this is not in America's interests to be supporting Israel in this conflict at all. And even in some cases, making the case that Christians should not be in favor of America's support for Israel here, given the death toll and given its residual effects on Christians in Israel. And if you go online for 2 minutes, you'll see this debate breaking out within the Republican Party about whether this is, whether we have any proper role in this conflict, whether it's supporting Israel. We're not, obviously, nobody's calling for our boots to be on the ground, including Israel. But the support that we're giving, is it appropriate? Should we get out? And is there some growing divide between Christians and Jews?
I think a lot of it's based on ignorance. I really do, because if anybody, I've been to Israel a lot in the West Bank, and if anybody goes to, say, Bethlehem, or they go into Lebanon, what's happening all over the Middle East, Megan, is Christians are being ethnically cleansed. If you look at the population, I think, of Bethlehem in the late 90s, and I went there as early as the 70s, it was 80, there were 70 or 80% Christian. It's down to about 10 or 20%. And the same is true of villages in Lebanon. And so Christians themselves, not their spokesmen who have to, the problem we have when we have Christians in the Middle East that are living in the under in Gaza, or there's not many, they've been ethnically cleansed from Gaza, most of them. But if they're speaking in Syria or they're speaking in the Palestinian Authority, they're terrified. And everything they say is monitored. So mostly the Christians are very anti-Israel, the spokespeople. But when you look at actual events on the ground, they have fled. They either go to Europe or mostly to America or Israel. I think Israel's getting close to having 200,000 Christians. And they're not people who were there in 1947 necessarily. Most of them came to Israel as a refuge from religious persecution by Muslim governments. And I think most of the evangelical community that I know of is still very pro-Israel. I think what we're talking about is the libertarian right intellectual movement. And I understand, you know, I know that Tucker Carlson has voiced some things, Candace Owens has, the Cato Institute's been really vocal. There's some people on that website who've called for breaking relations almost with Israel. But I don't think it represents most Christians, much less most Americans. But I don't know quite what their arguments, because I've seen so many of them, you know. It doesn't take a lot of brains to say there's 500 million people in the Middle East and there's 12 million that live on a democratic government. And that is the only democratic constitutional system there. And when you go to Haifa or Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, and I have been to every Arab country in the Middle East, and you go to, except Emirates, I haven't been there, but if you go to Tunis or you go to Tripoli, or you go to Cairo, and these are moderate countries. You go to Jordan, you go to Baghdad, you go to Beirut, you go to Damascus, and then just compare it going to Haifa, for example. And it's just night and day. None of these people who are saying death to America, if they dared to go back into their own countries and they said death to Assad or death to the Palestinian or death to Hamas, they would be killed or they'd be in jail. But they wouldn't, if you're in Israel and you say death to Netanyahu, you're not. And so it's not Muslim Christian, it's just an empirical difference between a free society that lives by the rule of law and its neighbors who do most for the vast majority do not. And anybody on the right who can't make that distinction is, I don't know what you do with them, but It's a no-brainer.
Well, our audience should know, you're, in addition to the classics that you teach, you're an expert in warfare. You've written a lot of books on it. You've studied a lot of conflicts, seen how they played out. And I heard you on your show, which I love, talking about this. Yes, you've talked in the past about proportionality, but you were talking about like the extreme response to Israel after it, I don't know if the word is inadvertently, but mistakenly killed these central kitchen workers. Their van was labeled, it was clear that they, or should have been clear that they were not combatants for Hamas, but Israel made a mistake and they fired two people over it. But still, you've got innocents now who are dead. And this has led to President Biden, many others saying, that's it. Like, you've got to change it. That's the Kamala Harris soundbite. You've got to change your tactics or we're going to change ours. And, you know, you brought your hefty dose of reality if we want to take a hard look at civilian deaths in a war conflict.
Well, I mean, I walked through Fallujah about a year and a half after we retook it, and it looked like a moonscape. And we were doing all we could not to kill civilians that were intertwined within the sons of the Ba'athist and ISIS. And we leveled Mosul. Or actually, the Iraqi forces, with our help and air power, leveled Mosul. And I didn't hear anybody in Dearborn say anything. I didn't hear anybody in Dearborn say, my God, we stand with Chechnya. Putin, when we had the second Chechen war, he leveled Grozny, leveled it. It didn't even exist. I didn't hear anybody in Dearborn say a word. I didn't hear anybody in Dearborn ever object to what the Taliban were doing to women. I really didn't hear that. And so I don't hear anybody talking today. There's a million Muslim Uyghurs in China that are being oppressed. I hear Blinken talking about it and equating the Gazans with the Uyghurs, but I don't hear anybody in Dearborn. So there's something else is what I'm trying to say going on. And when you look at the usual ratio, it's 3 or 4 civilians to 1 is pretty good. I don't mean anything's good in an urban warfare, but there's outside observers who've come back and said the number of actual militants, terrorists, combatants who are killed versus civilians is about 1 to 1 or 1.5 to 1. And that shows you that's a great deal of care. And you know, another thing, it's really bizarre, Megan. We have 2 wars going on. And I haven't heard anybody on the left, and I haven't heard this administration say to Mr. And I support Mr. Zelensky's right to defense. I'm glad we give them weapons. And I break with some people on the right. I don't want to go into Moscow or attack Russia on the offensive, but to defend themselves, they have a right. But have you heard anybody say, Mr. Zelensky, you need a wartime bipartisan government, just like we made Mr. Netanyahu do? No, he canceled elections. He canceled habeas corpus. He outlawed political party. Do they ever say to the Ukrainians, you've got to be proportionate. Do not be disproportionate and start something. No. Do they ever say when you send drones into Crimea on bridges and highways to disrupt transportation of the Russian military, you've got to be very careful about collateral damage. You've got to have collateral damage. Now, I think it's very sad that there's been 30, we don't know how many people have been killed in Gaza. We do know there's somewhere between 700,000 and 800,000 dead, wounded, and missing Russians and Ukrainians. We're beyond the Battle of Verdun in World War I. We're getting close to the Battle of Somme territory. And I haven't heard anybody in this administration say, we need a ceasefire right now. This is the largest carnage that we've seen since World War II, and it's right in Europe. And we've got to do something. 700,000 to 800,000 people have been destroyed. 12 million people, 28% of Ukraine has left the country. It doesn't even have 45 million. It's down to about 30 million. They're running out of manpower. They are destroying that country. I haven't heard anything. No ceasefire talk. And yet we say to the Jewish state, ceasefire can't be disproportionate. Got to have coalition government. You've got to, no collateral damage. And it's bizarre. And everybody said, well, Russia started it. They went in there. So what do you expect Ukraine to do? Yeah, I agree with that. And Hamas broke a ceasefire. What do you expect Israel to do?
And by the way, there's not 3 dozen Americans dead killed by design.
Absolutely.
By the Russians in that conflict, right? Like, we,
and they don't,
that's what we have here. Hamas took Americans, killed them, and still have five hostage. I got to take a
break. And why, Megan, you made a really excellent point. I feel terrible about the Wall Street Journal reporter, but this everybody is obsessed on one American hostage, and they should be, that Russia has taken. But they don't say one word. We still have five or six American hostages that are in somewhere in that tunnel, if not dead. I never hear Mr. Biden say anything publicly about that. So there's a big asymmetry, and they should explain why that is on these two wars.
Yeah, they're not the same. The growing sentiment among Republicans in particular against the Ukraine war is spilling over into the Israeli conflict, from which much less has been asked of the United States. Israel's doing its own thing. Ukraine is asking for more and more from us. So I don't know why they're getting lumped together. Maybe there are other reasons, but VDH is an expert on it all. Stand by. There's more with Victor coming up ahead. The latest on the Democrats' BS claims about crime and Joe Biden's new promises on immigration. Don't go away. I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Did you know that 35% of adults report experiencing poor sleep quality? Well, let me tell you about Cozy Earth. Discover the secret to better sleep with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Here's an exclusive offer just for you. Use code Megyn for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature regulating technology, adapting to your body's needs, ensuring a sleep experience tailored to you. They use only the very best fabrics and materials, inviting you to sink into a world of comfort. Worried about commitment? Enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and also a 10-year warranty on all purchases. That's a decade of unparalleled comfort and support. Incorporate Cozy Earth products into your self-care routine and enhance your sleep quality and overall wellness. Treat yourself to ultimate comfort with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. Head on over to CozyEarth.com. Use the promo code Megyn for 35% off your order. Upgrade your nights. Transform your days with Cozy Earth. President Trump is out on the campaign trail before they send him to prison, which is the goal of at least three prosecutors in Atlanta, Jack Smith in two different jurisdictions, and next week, Alvin Bragg in New York. He is in Atlanta, Georgia, and he made a surprise stop at Chick-fil-A. Here's a little bit of him ordering milkshakes and chicken for everyone in the restaurant. Listen.
So can I have 30 milkshakes and also some chicken? I'm going to take care of the customers.
It's a nice clip. Okay, so he's ordering. He goes, can I get 30 milkshakes and some chicken for the people here? And then you'll see. So these were just for the listening audience. I think everybody there was black. All the workers were black. They were not recoiling in fear or horror at this racist president who's been portrayed nonstop that way by the media and in Atlanta and by people like Fannie Willis. He got a hero's welcome, including from this employee. Watch this.
I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. We support you.
We support you, man.
Okay, 4 p.m. We've been 4 p.m.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
This is what's special about Trump. Right. And he gets out there with the people and he does stops like that, something Biden's incapable, literally incapable of doing. That's magic for him.
Yeah, I, that's why, I, you know, in our previous conversation, I'm a little bit more confident because I think this is starting to look more like 2016 than 2020. And I think the left was surprised in 2016, so they prepared in 2020, and the right was surprised. And I think now they're both on level ground, and that's going to help Trump. But, you know, I as I said before, I live in a community that's about 90% Latino, and everybody said the Latino vote is conservative, but it never quite goes to Republicans. It's always about 35 to 40%. But I think a Latino males, especially over 30, it's going to go 50% at least. It won't matter in California, but it will matter on the down ballot in congressional districts. And it might matter in places like Arizona, especially in Georgia, maybe even Colorado in some races. So what I'm getting at, I think a lot of the minority community is starting to follow the trends of the white working class that used to be in the days of Bill Clinton, still union, Democratic, and they got so tired of being lectured to by these bi-coastal elites that they rebelled. And they said, we want cheap gas. We're not into your global warming, transgendered DEI agendas. And everybody thought that would never happen to the Latino and Black elite. But I think your point about Fannie Willis or Letitia James, I don't think they represent a lot of Black people, maybe the majority, but not all of them. And given the polarization that the Democratic Party has instilled, they need about 85% of the Black vote. I'm not sure they're going to get it. And I think we're just starting to see a lot of people saying, you know what, I want inexpensive rent. I want inexpensive insurance. I want to be able to afford food and gas. And you know what? You're the Black leadership's DEI for a bunch of Black elites that squabble over the anchorship at MSNBC or the deanship at Harvard or president. That doesn't affect me at all. And I don't like you to tell me how I have to vote. And I think it's going to surprise people. It's going to be a lot larger defection from Biden. And Biden's a catalyst, by the way. There's something about him that people don't warm to, especially in the Black community. When you say you ain't Black or put you all in change, or Barack Obama's the first Black president who can speak articulately, or he calls one of his assistants boy, or uses the word Negro. He's got a whole record of that. And, you know, when you see a lot of interviews with Black average people, they don't warm to Joe Biden, and they have natural reasons not to. And I think that's gonna multiply.
It's the same as what we saw in that story from the NPR whistleblower yesterday that hit on the Free Press, who said, we've devoted the past almost 4 years since George Floyd to DEI rules everything. It's, quote, our North Star, our hiring. We always have to make sure what their race is, that's illegal, and hire accordingly. Our programming, this is what defines us. And 4 years later, what has it gotten them? Zero uptick in their Black and Hispanic listenership. Zero. Because unbeknownst to NPR, apparently, Blacks and Hispanics are interested in the same thing as whites and Asians and everybody else, which is, what's in my wallet? Can I afford my rent? What does my future look like? And are we safe in our communities and at our border and so on? And even Joe Biden, at some level, has been told that, because what did he do yesterday? He gave an interview to Univision. And when speaking in front of a largely Hispanic audience, he promised that he is looking at an executive order to control the southern border, not in front of a right wing or at least purple state audience, Victor. He's talking to Hispanics. And there he breaks the news that by the end of April, he may sign an executive order that would reportedly, I'm quoting here from Axios, dramatically limit the number of asylum seekers who can cross the southern border, just as Trump did, notwithstanding the fact that he'd already told us he couldn't do anything unless the Congress acted. But he's doing this in front of this audience for a reason.
He is, and he understands that what the elite Latino community tell him on the left is not what the majority of Latinos. And I can tell you, and this Mexican-American community, when you let all of these people and you bust them in, then what you're basically saying to people who are on Medicare, Medi-Cal, EBT cards, WIC cards, you're going to have a lot longer for your mom to get dialysis treatment. You're going to go in the store and there's going to be somebody who does not speak English and they're going to have four or five cards and it's going to hold you up in line and they're going to have cards that need to be authenticated that you're, and they don't like it. And they look at the public schools here. Are we going to go back to English as a second language or are we going to have advanced placement? And so a lot of people, I don't think Biden understands that there's such a large Hispanic community and it's third generation, second, most of these young kids don't speak Spanish anymore. And they have, you're exactly right. They have the identical aspirations, values as anybody else. And Biden keeps pandering as if they're right. They just walked across the border or, and now he's trying to see that that's wrong. And he's trying to pander the other way. But you know, when you listen to Kamala Harris, does anybody really think that a Black person that's middle class and is a carpenter or is a delivery man or is a plumber, when he listens to her, he's going to think, wow, she's Black. I'm going to vote for the Biden ticket. She has nothing in common with him. And I think a lot of Black people and Latino are saying, you know what? Our leaders are just like these white out of touch. They're the Pete Buttigiegs that happen to be Black. And we don't have anything in common, just like the people in East Palestine. And if that's true, Donald Trump, for all of his faults and crudity, he did something that no Republican had ever envisioned. Not the Bushes, not McCain, not Romney, not Bob Dole. He really tried to substitute class for race. And that was an ecumenical idea that we're going to create a national workers, nationalist Republican Party, and it's going to transcend race and accentuate common class aspirations. Cheap gas, fuel, affordable energy, affordable food, affordable housing for the middle class. And if he does that, and the Republican Party starts to be a magnet for people on the basis of class, the Democratic Party will go completely crazy.
Well, you saw today, Victor, that not only do we have, you know, he's clearly worried about the border, as he should be, but the inflation numbers. Overall prices, okay, since overall prices today up 19.4% under Biden. These are updated figures. The inflation report came out, and it's worse than expected. Since he took office, gasoline up almost 50%, 47.8%. Groceries up 21%. Eating out up 21%. Baby food, 30%. Pet food, 23%. Rent, 20%. Electricity, 28%. Natural gas, 20%. 6.9. Used cars, 20. Airfare, 32. Public transportation, 22. Real average weekly earnings, down 3.9%. So that's why he's not talking about Bidenomics anymore.
I know. And people get very angry when he says, well, inflation's moderate. It doesn't matter if it's only 3 or 4%, which is higher than it was under Trump, because he's never really dealt with or explained why eggs or why car insurance or why rent are 20-30% higher than when he came into office. He should be saying we're going to get prices down.
Why is organic milk $9?
Exactly. Why doesn't he say that we're going to get prices back to where they were in 2021 or maybe 2%? He never says that. He just says, basically, he's telling people we screwed up. We made it almost impossible to live. But now it's only getting worse a little bit. It's not as really bad like it was. He's never saying we're going to rectify what we did.
No, it's I said this before. It's like the supermodel. Our economy, it was like the supermodel who then gains 200 pounds and then she asks you to celebrate the fact that she lost two. Then she lost another two. And we're kind of like, oh, we missed the supermodel version of ourselves.
I know. And they think people are stupid. Even David Axelrod said, I think yesterday, he said, Biden's got to shut up and not go talk about building bridges or a $1 trillion new Green Deal or any of that stuff, and just talk about getting prices down. And I don't think that's going to change before November. It's really, I mean, when I go fill up, Megan, I've never seen this. I go to a discount gas thing, a rural place 2 miles from here. I'm the only non-Hispanic. And when you get in line to get in your car, you wait. You know why you wait? Because nobody can put it on their credit card because they're all maxed out. So you know what they do? They go into the office or the little stand and they pay cash, and they don't pay. It's $6 now for gas here in California. They don't pay for, you know, 20 gallon tank, $120. They pay 10 or 15. They go back and put gas in their car. And then they think, well, maybe I have an extra $12. I'll go back in and buy two more gallons. It's like, and nobody, Biden has no idea what he's done to people or Newsom here in California. $6. And on the coast yesterday, when I was in it was $6.30 yesterday when I filled up in Palo Alto on the way home. So, you know, he doesn't have any idea the effect it has on middle class people. Or when you see people, and it's 105 here, they can't afford the power bill, PG&E. So they go into Walmart and use the free air conditioning and let their kids play with the toys as if Walmart is a daycare center. Aww. Because the heating is so, and the cooling is so cheap. It's nothing. They can't turn on their air conditioner. We have 4 million people and 4 million households in California who haven't paid their power bill. 4 million out of just 12. I think it's 15 million.
And so what does he do? So what does he do? He comes up with another student loan, quote, forgiveness program for rich, college-educated, law school grads, school grads. He's trying to show, those people are going to have to sweat and go to the Walmart to cool down with their children. But these elites with the degrees, it's going to help them because he needs to shore up the youth vote. And over here on the East Coast, Victor, we're going through the crime wave and being told not just by Biden, but his most ardent supporters, it's not happening. Crime's done. He solved it. Listen to Rachel Maddow just a couple weeks ago.
The FBI reports that violent crime in America is at a 50-year low. Yeah.
And migrant crime is not a thing.
And migrant crime is not a thing. And you live on Earth One.
Okay, it's at a 50-year low. This is so, misleading. I'm going to give you the floor, but I just want to show you one other thing before I do. And that is just today. This is making the rounds online in Queens. Look at this. It's terrible. This man comes up. He shoves this reportedly 69-year-old woman down the stairs. She's clearly unconscious. She was going up the stairs of a church, robs her, takes her purse, runs away. This is, I could have pulled 10 others like this. Every day we see violent crime like this. And yet we're just told, I mean, not to mention the shoplifting and the carjackings. And we're just told, don't believe your lying eyes, because in Rachel Maddow's neighborhood, things are fine.
Exactly. And we don't even go back. You could try to go on the FBI statistics. They're about 2 years behind anyway. And now we get, I think, news reports last couple of days, a lot of their statistics are not as accurate as they say they are. But even the ones that they present us, when you look at 2021 and you look at today, it's the same thing as you mentioned in inflation. Crime goes out of control, 21, 22, 23, and it couldn't get much higher in terms of aggravated assault, murder, without being unsustainable. Then it just tapers off for a year and they say crime hasn't gone down. Well, it's like saying prices are cheap because inflation was 3%. Murders only went up 1%. That's a smaller rise. But go back to when he started and go look at what's going on. And I mean, everybody knows it. So they're not going to run, Megan. They know it. They're not going to run on how safe they made everybody. Just like they're not going to run how cheap things. This is just something for the talk shows and
Rachel Maddow. Okay, so what they're going to run on?
Yeah,
there is
all
January
she has to
6th,
do is
and threats to democracy.
Exactly.
Threats to democracy, and that leads me to the Kamala Harris soundbite that I promised. Well, here's Joe Biden just to kick it off, because he, in that same Univision interview, he was asked, "What's the biggest threat to democracy right now?" And here's how he answered.
What, in your view, constitutes the primary threat to freedom and democracy at home?
Donald Trump. Seriously. Donald Trump uses phrases like, you're going to eviscerate the Constitution. He's going to be a dictator on day one. Look at the way he talks about minority populations, Hispanics. You know, we're talking about them being. Anyway, he says he's going to be a dictator on day one. No one doesn't believe him.
Okay, so that's the president.
And this is a man who said, you're not black, called one of his assistants, "Where's my boy?" We know what he said about Barack Obama. And more importantly, this is a man who just this week basically told the nation that he's going to ignore the Supreme Court and find a way to get around the Supreme Court prohibition of unilateral cancellation of student loans. And this is a president right now whose party is in the Senate, and they're violating the Constitution. They've been given a writ of impeachment, and they're supposed to schedule a hearing. And Chuck Schumer is so paranoid about this because he's got Democratic senators up in states that they're probably going to lose the election, especially they will lose the election if they do not impeach Mayorkas, but they sanction Mayorkas and what he did to the border. And so they're not going to hold a trial. They're going to try to postpone it. And they've never done that before. And we haven't had, never had a president who basically said, the Supreme Court got me on the first chance, I'm going to try it again. Not since FDR tried to pack the court, which they've also argued. And when you look at the whole picture, there's one party who got rid of the filibuster, who's trying to get rid of the Electoral College, who's trying to pack the court, who's trying to bring in new states. Their whole idea is process. When the system doesn't get their intended result, then they want to change the system. They're the ones who are trying to get a presidential candidate off the ballot. They're the ones using lawfare. Joe Biden knows that. Every time he says, pay your fair share, I always think, well, your son is right now facing income tax fraud. Why don't you just tell him to do it before you tell the nation to do it? I think people have had it. I really do. Joe Biden is not, he wasn't a nice guy. He's not a nice person. He's very crude. He's said things that were, I think, overtly racist. They've given him a complete pass on the way that he bothers the private space of women. He says things about himself that are completely untrue. He makes up stories about, you know, he was Greek or he was Puerto Rican or he was this and that or a truck driver or he was a great athlete. And he was the first person in his family ever to go to college, was a blatant lie. He just does it every day. And he's not a sympathetic character.
Yeah, it's like he went to the mall food court and picked every ethnicity and said, that's how he was raised. Exactly. That was a church I went to. That was my neighbor who raised me. That was my uncle. Wait, I've got to get this Kamala Harris soundbite in, which took it a step further on this podcast. I think it was yesterday. Thought for.
I don't think it's hyperbolic to say this genuinely could be the last Democratic election we ever have.
You're right. No, and I'm going to tell you, as vice president, I've now met with over 150 world leaders, presidents, prime ministers, chancellors, and kings. And in the last three international trips I've taken, which are, you know, going back to the end of last year through this year, world leaders have come up to me expressing their real concern.
Last Democratic election ever. This is it.
This is a person who was elected after she said in June of 2020, after there was all these violent demonstrations, you know, 120 days, 35 people killed, 1,500 police officers injured, $2 billion of damage, police precinct, court, iconic church torch, trying to storm the White House grounds to get at the president, who had to go into a bunker. And she said, this is not going to stop. It shouldn't stop. This is going to go all the way to the election. And she's talking about disruptions to democracy. All she had to do is say, she could have easily said, we lost the Supreme Court decision on the student loans, so we have to follow the court decision. That's all she, are we not going to let Mark Zuckerberg put $419 million to absorb the work of the registrars this time around? That's not a good thing to have in a democracy. Or we're going to make sure that every candidate gets on the ballot who's qualified. We're not going to take people's names off. That's all she has to say, but she's not going to say that. And it's, I agree that January 6th was a buffoonish riot, but it was not a full-fledged insurrection is the way that they talk about. That's a whole other topic. But in comparison to what happened in 2020 that was led by Antifa and BLM, it's no comparison in terms of violence, damage, arson, ruin people's lives, death. And they know that. And so part of it is messaging, Megan. We're not, we on the right don't message.
Undermentioned is January 6th. It was a terrible day, but it didn't cause, you know, for the next 3.5 years, death after death after death after death after death after death after death, like BLM riots did, because cops thanks to the Ferguson effect and the George Floyd effect, were so put upon, were so demonized, they held back. And who got hurt? The Black community, the inner cities, Black communities, some Hispanic. They died in greater numbers. Heather McDonald's going to be here soon. She's going to be talking about this, not today, but soon on the show. Yeah. And she's done great work on this. And so, like, it's had ongoing negative effects. I mean, deathly effects on the very communities Kamala Harris purports to be concerned about. But there's no accountability for any of that.
Well, the person that you just saw that hit the woman and knocked her off the steps to the church, and I think as she was laying there, he not only stole it, but she got up and went toward her car, and then he went and stole her car, if I'm not mistaken. But he did that on the premise that he's not going to be arrested. If he's arrested, he's going to have no cash bail. If he should be incarcerated, he's going not to be indicted. If he's indicted, he probably won't be convicted. If he's convicted, he probably will be released. That's how he thinks about it. And there's no deterrence left. And that was part of this whole critical race theory that the left gave us, that the laws don't mean anything. They're constructs created by wealthy white privileged people who warp things in their own interests. So it's against a law to steal sneakers because some billionaire white guy doesn't steal sneakers. So he made a law so other people can't. That's basically critical legal theory. And they know what they've done. And I think we're going to see a lot of really desperate things go on. It reminds me so much, Megan, of 1980 when Jimmy Carter, it was a disaster, inflation, the Iranian hostage, Soviets on the move, and he was neck and neck with Reagan. And he was neck, people forget that. He was neck and neck all the way to almost October. In fact, in one poll, 2 weeks before the election, he was eight. And then people just said, you know, I've had it. I don't want to hear the lies anymore. This is incompetent. And then they just, the last 2 weeks, it just blew up. I think it's going to be a very close race, but if Trump is smart and he sticks to the agenda and what he's going to do and outlines what's happened to the country and what the solution is, I think he could really break open the election in the late summer. I really do. And win this House and Senate. He's going to be outspent. He's going to have the media. He's going to have all the institutions against him. But if he sticks to the agenda and he can control what he says, there's a lot of people, and I think we've talked about it, there's millions of people out there who say, give me a reason to vote for you, because I do not want what's going on to continue. I just need a reason to vote for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if he can give that reason, smart. They're going to, yeah.
So in sum, don't say too much. Thumbs up on the Chick-fil-A visits. Very good. Nice moments. Very good. Fight fire with fire on the abortion debate. Because as controversial as some of these things are, like the Arizona decision and sound bites like the one we played from our friend, there are far more controversial sound bites on the other side and relating the policies that the far left supports and Joe Biden would support if reelected. And keep driving home the message on the economy and the border. And you know what? Let them focus obsessively on DEI, which we've seen time after time is a loser for them. Victor Davis Hanson, you're the wisest. You're the smartest guy I know. I love listening to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Come back again soon. Okay, don't forget, the book is The End of Everything. Go order it now. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.